Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I rate the NXT hits and misses. I do have one up for you on pwtorch.com if you'd like to check out what I thought of the show tonight. And here to talk to me about the show is Bruce Hazelwood.
Hey, everybody. Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And you can find my report up for what was a busy show tonight.
Well, speaking of your report, the good Reverend Keith just said that you don't have the link in your report, so that might be why we don't have any callers.
Really? Let me check. I copy and paste from the link. Should be there. I mean,
all right.
No, it says that page is missing. Oh, I need to get the new...
All right. So that makes sense. Because we don't have any callers in our queue tonight, and I thought that was weird. We usually have a few people. So let me let Keith know. But anyway, I'm not going to sit here and type during my intro. So let's we'll talk right about the main event here tonight. So let's do just that. So our main event of the evening was Bron Breakker versus Trick Williams in a singles match where Trick Williams is looking to get some retribution on Bron Breakker after he being Bron Breakker, put Carmelo Hayes through what I like to call, quote, a wall last week. That wall that was clearly made of cardboard that they've used before and I guess continue to use again and again. It looked cool, but it was very clearly cardboard. But anyway, Trick Williams, he well fought against Bron Breakker. He did end up coming out on the losing side of things here tonight, as we kind of expected. Carmelo Hayes came out to make the save after the match and wound up on the wrong end of a spear himself. Bron Breakker wound up closing the show out, throwing the title down on a fallen Carmelo Hayes and kind of standing over him to end the show. I thought it was a pretty decent match, quite frankly. Trick Williams, he had a little moment it was either last week or the week before with Apollo Crews, where Crews kind of called him out and said, essentially don't stand in the shadow of Carmelo Hayes. You'll eventually be, you're eventually going to be a star yourself. He didn't quite say that. I forget exactly what he said, but essentially something along those lines. And I completely agree with him. We talked about it then. I just kind of want to reiterate that right now. And I think he proved that tonight. Not only is he's fantastic on the mic. We didn't really get to see a lot of his mic work tonight, if I'm not mistaken. He hung with, the former champion in the ring tonight. It's not necessarily hard to do with Bron Breakker, but, is what it is. I do have to say I'm really digging Bron Breakker as a heel, both in the ring and out of the ring. He had a bit of a backstage interview tonight where he didn't come off like a Steiner. He actually had a halfway decent, somewhat eloquent sort of, but at least coherent promo where he wasn't
to the point.
To the point. Thank you. That's probably a better way of putting it. Very to the point. Interview backstage and it, like I said, it wasn't screaming. It didn't come off Steiner-esque. So I definitely dug that and the way he was able to present himself there. And at least for me, I noticed this tonight and I honestly might have to go back and actually watch a match or two of before the heel turn here. I just feel like he's a little bit angrier in the ring and he's laying things in a little bit more, which I feel like certainly helps out with that that heel persona. But Bruce, let me throw it over to you and talk about what you thought of the main event and the post-match angle.
Yeah, let me hit Breakker first since you were just talking about Breakker and his style. It matches his character more because the little things he did tonight, like just heelishly kicking away at Williams while Williams was recovering on the ground, almost as if Williams was a piece of trash. He was just kicking out the lay or something. The mocking and the taunting and the yelling at Williams during the match. These are all things that it would have looked weird if he did as a babyface, but because his character was so bland as a babyface, everything he did just didn't match. And what he's doing now definitely matches up more with his character he's presenting. I wrote in my report, he's just so much more interesting as a heel than he ever was as the face champion we had for so long. And part of that is he just seems to believe in this. I guess the presentation that I get, what I receive, is that he believes in this character more than he did in the babyface version of his character. Not to say that Bron Breakker in real life is, you know, a piece of crap or anything, but I feel like it's easier for him to channel some of those more, those tendencies we associate more with jocks, a lot of them being heelish, than for him to be the happy-go-lucky guy, especially considering the nepotism involved and his physical gifts versus other people who may have, like a Hank Walker, for example, who didn't get the same start as Breakker, partly due to his pedigree. So he looked a lot better. His little interview with Mackenzie Mitchell earlier in the night where he was getting ready in the locker room and she came in, I thought was one of the best Breakker promos because he basically just told her off and said, I didn't ask for this promo time. You didn't. And if you don't like this new attitude, so basically she asked about his new character, his new attitude. And he said, I didn't change anything. I just stopped caring. Caring about the fans and what they thought, basically, and just told her, if you and anyone else don't like who I am, there's the door. I didn't ask for this interview time anyway. And I thought putting that little last line in there, I don't know if it was an ad lib or if it was part of the script, but that was, I think, what turned the interview into from a good one into a great one. And then when he said, you know what, never mind, and he turned to the camera and called out Hayes and Williams, I thought that was really well done, because instead of saying something like, you know, I'm going to break you in half, or I'm going to, you know, kill you in the ring, things that just don't make sense. He said, I'm going to put you in the same hospital as Hayes, which makes sense because, one, he did put Hayes in the hospital last week, you know, or local medical facility. And two, he's shown that he will do it, you know, go the extra bit to put someone into such physical pain that they do end up going to the hospital. So just a lot more believable here. And then we get to Williams. This is really his first, he said, you know, kayfabe, this is my first big test. But honestly, outside of kayfabe, too, it's his first big test because I don't think he's had a main event match before. And if it was, it wasn't a singles match. And a lot of times, wrestlers can come into this, especially in NXT, and let the moment overwhelm them, look a bit hesitant. He showed none of that tonight. He went straight at Breakker when the bell rung. He showed no hesitancy. He showed no intimidation. He showed no fear of being in a main event or not. In a main event singles match with not the champion, but the former champion, someone who is basically the 1B to Carmelo Hayes in terms of how they look at the championship picture in NXT. On the men's side, we say every time he comes out, every time he competes in the match, he just gets better and better. And it's true because I think tonight, especially with that lack of hesitancy, that lack of fear that he showed, I just felt like he had such a great night in the ring. He showed a lot of what makes him great. I believe he has a boxing background, and I keep saying it week in, week out, watch the footwork. People, especially, you know, in any of the martial arts, especially in boxing, footwork is so important. And I think it's an underappreciated aspect of professional wrestling. So keep an eye on that with Trick Williams, because I think what you saw tonight with him, his quick movements, his ability to quickly shift into hitting these picture-perfect drop kicks, his punches, and then I liked how he sort of rolled over and lifted Breakker into an uranage at the end, basically the rock bottom, for what was a believable near fall. I just feel like when you look at 2.0 on the men's side, Hayes and Breakker, obviously, big successes. Williams is that sneaky one you didn't really see coming, and here he is, I think having the best performance of his career tonight.
I agree. I think that was the absolute best promo he pulled off. And I'm not
even talking about his promo. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. You know, but I actually both of them, really, the promo and the backstage, but
barbershop segment.
Yeah. The barbershop segment there, the, one of you know, during the interview, you know, you brought up the fact that he kind of switched gears real quick. He was like, I didn't even want this interview anyway. I didn't ask for this interview anyway. It reminded me of Kevin Owens. I'm not saying anywhere near as good as Kevin Owens, but like shades there. Like you said, I don't know if it was an ad lib or whatever. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I spent, 5 minutes of my day today watching a compilation of Kevin Owens saying funny things on YouTube. But like it, I don't know, when he said that, it just, that's immediately what my mind went to, is, you know, something that Kevin Owens might just throw into a promo, you know, ad lib. And I don't know. I like it. I just want to at least call that out. Speaking of calling things
and
out,
to be even more on the nose about it, it's more like NXT Kevin Owens, because if you listen to 8YB right now and what Kelly and Tom are talking about in terms of Kevin Owens' character right now, it's pretty much what you saw from Breaker tonight, just completely dismissive of everybody, but when he has the time, he's going to use it efficiently, that kind of stuff. So I think you have a good comparison. I'm not so sure if it's more like Owens now, but I definitely would say it resembles NXT Owens a lot.
Yeah. I'm not saying anything near as good as, you know, Kevin Owens is today, but it, you know, definitely shades of Kevin Owens. Yeah, for sure. But as I was saying, because I was about to say, speaking of calling out, I'm going to call Kelly out for not hitting the mailbag last week. I mean, granted, neither Bruce or I remembered either, but yeah, you know, Kelly hosted the show, so it's his job to remember. So that said, considering we don't have any callers this week, also because we didn't get the links up in the report, I guess. Meaning
They're there now.
I should probably put them in the hits and misses too. I don't normally, but maybe I should. We had two emails when I started the sentence, and now we have three. Let me go ahead. Let's hit the mailbag, and then we'll hit the rest of the show after that. I'll keep my eye on the phone lines. Good Reverend Keith was looking for the link, so hopefully he'll join us and give us his take on tonight's show. But first, let's hit an email from Steve Repsher. He says, "Greetings, gentlemen. It's been a while. Do you think it's wise for the WWE to put NXT Battleground directly head-to-head with AEW's Double or Nothing pay-per-view? I doubt the move is an attempt to curtail buys of the AEW pay-per-view, since this is hardly the brand or the card to do that. I was concerned on draft weekend that after Indy and Fire and Dawn were drafted, the purge would continue with Hayes, Gallus, and or Wes Lee, creating a Battleground pay-per-view that would fill multiple vacant championships. And lastly, aren't these women's first rounds pairings the most predictable things?" Yep. Yes, they are. "I was surprised that JC didn't interject herself in the Stratton-Dolan match." So was I. I actually wrote about that in the hits and misses myself.
We discussed that offline, too.
Yeah, we did. I think I put it in the hits and misses. Maybe I was thinking about talking about it with you, but I think I put that in the hits and misses anyway. He says, "Take care, Steve Repsher." So, first off, the WWE putting Battleground against Double or Nothing, it's Memorial Day weekend. So I remember reading something. It was either last week or week before. It was Shawn Michaels. I mean, granted, you know, of course, he's a company guy. He's going to, you know, shill a company narrative. But, you know, essentially he just said, no, it's Memorial Day. We just put on a show, and they're putting on a show, too. You know, I don't know if it was necessarily an internal decision to put, you know, the show up against AEW, but I think it was probably just a decision to do a show on Memorial Day weekend to try and get some extra ticket sales. I'm a little bit worried about ticket sales for Battleground, and actually, you know, I should look at the Song of Serena's website while I'm thinking about it and see what they've got left, but They advertise Battlegrounds like four times tonight, and I don't feel like they do that for a lot of shows unless like it's poor ticket sales. So I'm curious. I'm curious to see how many people I'm going to be sharing a building with for Battlegrounds. What he was talking about with the draft was kind of more of a comment or anything. And we addressed the first round. We addressed the women's pairings and the brackets already. So I don't know if you have anything to chime in on with this email, or if we want to move on.
Well, so I said in our little group chat that the only thing that would surprise me and would kind of make me mad is if they found a way to have JC interject in Gigi's match or vice versa, so that we get Tiffany and Roxanne out away from the title scene. And honestly, it should have been Perez and Stratton in the finals, but we're getting them in the semifinals instead. So if Perez doesn't win next week, then I'm pretty sure we're going to have a Cora J. Or, I mean, if Perez wins next week, I'm pretty sure we're going to have a Cora J championship. And if Stratton wins next week, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Tiffany Stratton. So,
yep.
It's, yeah. And of course, I think the outlier would be they could go back to Perez beating Jay, but I think that story's already been done. So it's whoever wins that semifinal match between Perez and Stratton, I think is going to be the telltale sign of who's going to win the Women's Championship tournament. That being said, I'm not the biggest fan of how the brackets were laid out. I was hoping for a 12 or 16 woman bracket because that would get us a chance to highlight more women. I understand maybe with the time we have between now and Battleground that might not have been feasible, but you could have just had, you know, tonight just be all quarterfinal matches and next be all semifinal matches. That way you have your match set up for Memorial Day weekend. But okay, so they go with eight, which I noted in my report that it's an eight-woman tournament, but last week we saw around 11 women out there. Remember Wendy Chu was also out there. I think Electra Lopez, Ulyssa Leon.
Yeah.
So there were more people out there, and they unfortunately, although they showed management they want the title, they weren't chosen. And they made a big deal tonight about each woman being hand-chosen by Shawn Michaels to be in this tournament. So they're really trying to make sure that we understand the women that are in this tournament have the eye of management as people you should keep an eye on. So they were a bit heavy-handed with that, but I think it got the message across. The next week, so you have Jade and Henley, and you have Dolan and Perez, or not Dolan, JC Jade and Perez, with how Dolan pretty much spent her pre-match promo overlooking Tiffany Stratton and focusing on JC Jane. Like, of course, she's going to lose. But this leads me to believe that she's somehow going to get involved in the match next week, which I don't think Roxanne Perez needs that to defeat JC Jane. But if they want to continue that storyline, which it seems like they still do, then they're probably going to have that happen next week. But like you said, it's surprising it didn't happen this week. So,
yeah,
go ahead.
Especially with Gigi Dolan bringing up JC Jane during like the pre-match like promo or whatever you want to call it. I was very surprised that Jane didn't wind up interfering in that match.
Yeah, and real quickly to the beginning of the show, I do think that it's a bit cheesy at times when you have them all lined up like this. But I remember this was how they introduced the Cruiserweight Classic, I'm pretty sure, and the Mae Young Classic, I'm pretty sure. So, how do I put this? I don't think it was as cheesy as it could have been tonight. But the fact that you didn't really – this could have been one of those, like, you know, American Gladiators or Nick Guts moment where you go camera to each person and kind of say – have the announcers just give, like, one quick sentence on each woman and being in the tournament, what their accomplishments are. Instead, you just kind of see them. You don't know – you don't get any introduction. If you're a new viewer, then it's kind of hard to know. And then you just go straight into the entrances for Tiffany Stratton and Gigi Dolan. So I think there could have been a little bit better management of time there, but they packed nine matches, backstage segments, and like a three-minute Nathan Fraser segment into 2 hours and 15 minutes or 2 hours and 10 minutes. So maybe they could have held off on some of the stuff on the show for next week, but whoa, they're really trying to make a build toward Battleground.
I haven't thought about the show Nickelodeon Guts in long time, and now
I think about it at least once a week.
I can't get do you have it guts out of my head, but I'm okay with that. I'm actually quite okay with that. All right, let's go back to the mailbag here. I'm actually going to read an email. We've got two emails from last week. One's from Kevin. One's and Kevin's is I think it was Kevin's. Hold on. Kevin's is, I think we touched on it last week, and it's kind of a little outdated after this week. And he also has another email coming this week. So Kevin, I'm just going to skip your email from last week. Don't take it personally. But before I get to your email from this week, I'm going to go to Azan White's email from last week. He says, "Hello, NXT crew. What has been the point of the script gimmick? I feel like it's one of the rare failure bookings of Shawn Michaels." Or actually, he says Shawn Michaela's. but Shawn Michaels. What's up with the dyad? They publicly want to be released, and at the same time, they're getting a push in title matches. Is this some kind of reverse psychology? And three, is Drew Gulak more valuable in NXT since he didn't call back up to the main roster like Jinder and Apollo. From Amazon in St. Louis, go VIP. So the Scripps gimmick, I don't know what the point of the Scripps gimmick is unless, you know, he's going to reveal his true form and come back as a more powerful Scripps or something. I don't know. I really don't, especially where they unmasked him last week. It was very clearly Reggie, even though they didn't say Reggie on commentary, you know, and we talked about this a little bit last week too, but even though they didn't say Reggie's name on commentary, like, hey, look who it is. I don't necessarily know where they're going with it. I don't necessarily think it's a booking failure because there's no way that they thought this gimmick was going to take off. I think there's a reason they portrayed it that way. I just have absolutely no idea what that reason is at the moment. I think last week either. I'll touch on the rest of the email first. He says, what's up with the dyad? They want to be released. At the same time, they're getting a push in title matches. We talked a little bit about this last week too, but personally, I think it just might be they're trying to build, WWE's trying to build a little bit of like goodwill with, with the grizzled young veterans, as they should rightfully be called. I don't really think they're enjoying this dyad gimmick. And quite frankly, I would much rather see them as grizzled young vets. I mean, tonight, we saw the dyad versus Gallus, which we'll talk about. We'll talk about maybe later, or maybe we'll get into it now. I don't know. But we saw the dyad versus Gallus, and grizzled young vets and Gallus. I mean, they were rivals over across the pond, and they, as far as I can remember on commentary, I don't think they brought up the fact that these guys were rivals over there, and they've had some banger matches before. I don't know. I obviously, they're not super happy in their current positions. I can't necessarily say I blame them, but we'll see what happens. Like I said, I think it's them getting the push, a little bit of a push in title matches. Hopefully, is WWE's hopes of making them happy and trying to retain them. And Drew Gulak is absolutely more valuable in NXT. He's on the main roster. You know, he's just going to be a lower card guy. He's never going to be, anybody, especially without the cruiserweight division. He's not going to ever be anybody that's kind of elevated. However, down here in NXT, he's kind of looked at as a bit of a veteran, ring technician, and that's the way they're portraying him. And I think it's effective. It was effective at building Hank Walker. It's been effective at getting Charlie Dempsey, over a little bit more with the U.S. audience. So I definitely think he's valuable down there, not just on screen, but probably off screen too. I mean, I don't have any knowledge or proof or whatever, that he's actually doing any sort of training or teaching at the Performance Center. But any time that you can have, a veteran, around, period, or somebody with, his level of knowledge in the ring, you're obviously going to learn something from them, whether they're your teacher or not. So I definitely think he is in the right spot for where he is, where his character is in the company. So let me throw that over to you, Bruce.
I forgot the first question, so I'll move to the other two.
The first question is about Scripps.
Oh, Scripps. I mean, yeah, okay. So the dyad, yes. They don't bring up the past rivalry because they were under a different name, and to bring up the different name means you're bringing up that these two have a story past that doesn't quite match what they're doing right now.
But they've done that before. It's not something that WWE shies away from. Sometimes they do, but every once in a while they will at least acknowledge something like that. And I don't know, I feel like with just how epic their rivalry was, I wish they would
have acknowledged it. Yeah, but I mean, outside of like Booker T being exasperated that Vic Joseph's still acting like he doesn't know that Scripps is Reggie or something, they don't really, or lately it's sort of if it's within the scope of the same character. Right. So
right.
If you see, people from on the main roster who feuded in NXT, they're bringing that up more now, but they're years removed from that. And right now with Gallus and the Dyad still being NXT, I feel like it's not an association they want to bring up to the people who are viewing NXT right now. So it is a bit odd that you give them the title shot when you know they want to be released in October. I think their contract is up in October, if I remember James Drake's.
It sounds right.
But if you're not going to put the title on them, I guess you're pretty much signaling that you're going to be released because you're not going to be signed with us anyway. And so, I mean, it pretty much, since we know they're not going to re-sign, I wrote that really this match was, it lacked a little bit of that something extra because I knew that there was no way Gallus would win the match. Sorry, not Gallus, the Dyad would win the match. For the Dyad, I'm just kind of keep saying they're still very professional. They're going out there. They're not phoning anything in. I do think, though, that since they became the Dyad, because of that change, they've had to modify their in-ring, and it hasn't been as exciting as it was in the past, but they're still serviceable. They're still good. They're not, you know, even in the promos, they're not just sitting there and acting like they wish they were somewhere else. But, yeah, and then moving on to the last one about Drew Gulak. It really, look, yeah, he wouldn't be used as much on TV on Raw or SmackDown as he's being used now. If that's what's important to him, then he's in the right spot. And going to the outside the ring stuff or the off the TV stuff, from what I read, and if I remember correctly, he's been the one that WWE has called upon to help train people like Logan Paul and Bad Bunny for their matches, because he is so technically sound and he's a good instructor. So him being in NXT is kind of the best of both worlds in terms of he gets to be on TV, he gets to work, but he's also been used as a coach many times, so he gets to still use and impart that wisdom on the up-and-comers, especially people in the NIL class who may have no background in professional wrestling. So I think when it comes to Drew Gulak, this is probably the best spot for him, both in terms of TV time and in terms of being able to be a teacher. Again, it's all dependent on what he wants to do, but from my perspective, this seems like a great spot for him to be in.
All right. Before I go back to Kevin Z, okay, I was going to see if we had anybody in the phone lines. We got somebody listening. We got a couple people listening, but nobody talking, or nobody wanting to talk. Actually, good time for me to throw this out there. If you want to be part of the show, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com if you'd like to send us an email, or you can call 515-605-9345. Press 1 on the keypad, which will let me know that you want to talk, and I'll bring you on, and we can commiserate, and it'll be fun. So let's go ahead and read Kevin Catani's email from this week. He says, "Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Tonight was a busy episode for sure. A good number of matches, 9. We had 9 matches tonight in storyline progress." The 9 matches thing, I threw that in there. He goes on to say, "I really liked the video packages that accompanied the women's tournament and thought they provided some needed information about the contestants. On that note, I suspect Cora and Roxanne will move on next week. That said, are we on a Lyra versus Stratton collision course for the title belt? I could definitely see them putting the belt on Stratton and letting the faces chase her. Lastly, I'm super excited to see Dragon Lee take off, but do you think pairing him with Noam Dar will hinder him? Thanks as always, and listen to 8YB and go VIP. Office hours now over." He says, "I'll selfishly hope they'll put some respect on Dijak's name soon. Kevin Catani, PhD." So, yes, definitely a busy show tonight. Like I said, 9 matches tonight. I didn't actually total up the in-ring minutes, but I'm sure there were quite a few of them, considering there were 9 matches. There were a lot of short matches, but I know there's at least a few that were like, you know, almost 10 minutes long.
Most are about 4 to 4.5 minutes, though, which is still pretty long for having 9 matches on a card.
Yeah, okay, cool. As far as, I changed tabs here. Here we go. Back to his email. The women's tournament. I kind of agree. I think Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez are going to go over next week, and, you know, we're going to wind up probably with Lyra versus Tiffany Stratton. I mean, just looking at the bracket, I've got it up on my screen right now. I don't really see another viable option. I can't see Fallon Henley going up against Lyra Valkyria in the semifinals. I can't see her beating Cora Jade next week. And I don't see JC Jane beating Roxanne Perez unless there's some sort of shenanigans or something. But I think the shenanigans are going to be Gigi Dolin interfering and costing JC Jane the match. You brought up a little while ago, Bruce. With Noam Dar and Dragon Lee, I don't think it's going to necessarily hinder him. I don't think Noam Dar is necessarily the first person that a lot of people think of when you're like, okay, who's this person's first opponent going to be? But, you know, he's been off TV for a while. He's got the Heritage Cup. He's a great in-ring talent. As we've seen the past couple times he's been on TV, he's decent on the mic. I don't think it's going to hinder him at all. I think the two of them are going to have some absolute banger matches, and it's probably going to wind up elevating both of them, which any good match should. So, at least elevate them in the way you want. Maybe you want to bring somebody down, but you know what I mean. Let me throw it over to you for the email.
Yeah, we touched on the women's title scenarios already, including that, you know, if whoever wins between Perez and Stratton is going to signal who's going to be champion and what finals matchup we do get. So this is another reason why we get the good professor to be a co-host sometimes, since he's on the same wavelength as us in terms of how we view the booking. Now, when it comes to Noam Dar and Dragon Lee, I don't think it's going to hinder him at all. I don't think it's going to hinder either of them at all, as you were saying. One thing that the men's division right now is lacking in a higher capacity is a Javier Bernal that is at least mid or upper card, right? The smarmy heel that can work and go. And that's Noam Dar. I mean, everything about his interrupting vignette tonight made me want to punch him in the face. He was so smarmy, so arrogant, and yet so cheeky at the same time, right? Just quintessential Noam Dar here, and he is a fantastic in-ring wrestler. He's a two-time winner of the Heritage Cup, as he brought up. He can do the technical stuff. He can, obviously, with winning the Heritage Cup, he can do the cruiserweight stuff. He's a really good character and a really good wrestler. And Dragon Lee, I keep bringing this up, but Dragon Lee has strength that goes beyond his frame. And someone like Dar is going to bump really well for him. But beyond that, we thought Fraser and Dragon Lee's fast. I mean, this is going to be another fast matchup because Noam Dar can fly. Dragon Lee can fly. And when I say fly, I don't mean just jumping through there. I mean, they can go fast. And so
it's going to be another... I thought you meant like literally could fly. And I was that's
Dragon
amazing.
Dragon Lee's a dragon after all, so of course he can fly.
Of course.
But yeah, they just are so quick in the ring. And it's going to be an intense matchup, but people are going to have to, like, take a moment to catch their breath because of just the intense action. So I don't think it's going to hinder them. I think it'll be fantastic in terms of both the in-ring work and the character development. I like that even though I don't catch every word that Dragon Lee says, I still appreciate the fact that and the difficulty involved in him doing his promos in a second language that he's not fluent in yet. So good, you know, real respect to him. And he doesn't show any intimidation or fear, even though it is his second language. He's just out there being him. And, you know, I hope that what they do is have a standard match, or have a British rules match, a British rounds match. Dar wins. Have a regular match, Lee wins. Then he challenges for the Heritage Cup, and it's in the rounds match, and they go from there. I think that'd be a good way to build it. Also get that sort of match style introduced to NXT stateside in a way that is a little more creative than just blasting the rules up on the screen before the match happens.
All right. And our next email is a scam email from Western Digital telling us that our account has had a network security incident and wants us to call to give them money.
Aren't they supposed to be really good with their technical stuff, too? Come on, Western
Digital. I know. Come on, Western Digital. But our next email is from Brian Alston. Brian Alston, longtime VIP Torch subscriber. He says, hello, friends. I saw the Women's Championship Tournament bracket a few hours ago. I should have sent in my picks, but by the time I decided to write you, Tiffany Stratton had already beaten Gigi Dolan. Scanning through and not reading Doc Bruce's report because I want to watch the rest of the show fresh, I saw that Lyra Valkyra also won her match against Kiana James. Conventional wisdom says to keep the heel face dynamic, Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade will win their matches against JC Jane and Fallon Henley, respectively. Perez wrestles Stratton, Jade fights Valkyria. Question, if you had to book one of these two matches so the final would be heel face or face face, or sorry, let me reread that. Question, if you had to book one of these two matches so the finals would be heel heel or face face, which one would it be? Stratton versus Jane or Valkyria versus Henley? Don't forget to listen to VIP Pro Wrestling Torch NXT 8 years back podcast for the May 13th, 2015 edition, where Kelly and Tom discussed the lead up to TakeOver Unstoppable just a week away. He says, watch for the second week in a row, an unnamed black man enters the performance center and signs a contract. Not sure what happened to him. For all I know, he has an okay NXT career, goes up to the main roster, has some good matches on Raw and SmackDown, wins the Intercontinental and U.S. Championships, goes back down to NXT, and gets drafted back to Raw on April 29th, 2023. But that's just pure speculation since they never said his name. Tom and Kelly also answer a movie question about Richard Dreyfuss. Thanks, and have a good night, Brian Alston. Brian, I think your email, I think your part about 8YB was longer than your part about this podcast. That's
it totally always
fine.
Is.
That's totally fine. I don't care. We always look forward to your emails and what you've got to say. I think he was talking about Apollo Crews. I'm just gonna guess. So if I had to book one of these two matches, so the finals would be heel heel or face face, Stratton versus Jane or Valkyria versus Henley. It's Valkyria versus Henley.
I think it's semifinals.
No, he said finals.
But I think the matchups would be in the semifinals. Right? Because Henley and Valkyria are on the same side of the bracket, and so are Stratton and Jane.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, I guess I miss... Who to put in the finals would be heel, face, face, which would be... Yeah.
Technicality aside.
Yeah, it would, for me, it would be, yeah, Valkyria versus Henley. But, yeah, technicality aside, it would be Valkyria versus Henley because, at least in my mind, not that I don't want to see Tiffany Stratton out in the ring, I don't necessarily want to see JC Jane in the ring. You know, I like the character, but, you know, her ring work is a little bit, you know, left to be desired. And for the NXT Women's Championship, I would rather see two women in the ring that can go. Henley, his drastically improved over the course of the last, I'm going to call it, year or so, maybe not quite. I think, you know, her and Valkyria be able to have a pretty banger match. It's not necessarily the match I'd want to see for the Women's Championship, but given those two, that would be my pick. As far as the rest of his email goes, basically talking about exactly some of the predictions that we've already had for the women's tournament. So let me throw this over to you for our final email.
Yeah, so if I'm going to book one of these two for the semifinal matchup, it will be Valkyria versus Helmy. Again, I like her character, but none of JC James' singles matches have given me confidence that having her in there with someone who's also as inexperienced as Stratton, even though Stratton has improved a lot, would lead to a good match. Whereas, even though I wrote things about, I said Valkyria's offense tonight, at times still looks a bit hesitant, like she was still trying to measure and think about it too much while she was throwing them to make it look impactful. I still think her and Henley would have a better match, especially if Henley brings out the aggressive side that she's been showing more and more in her matches the last couple of months. It's just, yeah, if I had to go with one of those two for those reasons in the semifinals, I'll go with Valkyria versus Henley. And if I had to, you know, if we're going to go for a finals, a face-face or a heel-heel matchup. I think I would go with a heel-heel matchup with Stratton and Jade because I think their character work, especially in the ring, would compensate for any in-ring physical mishaps. And I think their character power, their character work would overpower the sort of in-ring work we might get from Perez and Valkyria, whose characters aren't as fully developed in the ring as they are outside the ring. So looking ahead, that's what I would do if we're going to have to do a face-face or a heel. I'll go with the heel-heel in the finals if we have to come down to it.
Faux show. Am I muted? No. Okay. Faux show. Usually I can hear myself in my mic or my headset, and I couldn't for a second there. All right, while we're here, do we have anything that we want to talk about with either the opening match, which was the first tournament match where we saw Tiffany Stratton take on Gigi Dolin, or anything about Valkyria and Cora Jade?
I put Cora Jade, and I meant to put Kiana Jade.
Oh, yeah, Kiana
Jade. Brian,
I was going to say, yeah.
About that, and I just changed it on my report.
I should refresh.
So I was looking ahead to next week already, apparently, when I was putting the match down for my report tonight, but it happened. It's got a lot of stuff going on. To be fair, I was also watching my Sixers defeat the Celtics in Game 5, baby! That's right.
Oh, so,
in
so,
Boston. Let's go.
So you
let's
guys,
go.
So you guys are the reasons my friends are so upset right now.
Man, your friends are pricks. Go Sixers. All right. So when it comes to the first match, I have to agree with what Kelly and I think Brad in Florida said last week. Gigi's offense just looks – Gigi's entire in-ring work looks about a step behind. Her reversals, her strikes, they just looked a bit slow, unfortunately. And I'm not sure if – there's any lingering effects from any injuries or any hard bumps or anything like that, but it just doesn't seem like she has the confidence right now in the ring, at least when she's kind of throwing her offense, especially. That's when I noticed it tonight. And I said what I said already about Valkyria. When it comes to James, I'll say this. I think she has more potential in her than being the fall woman for almost every single match she's been in the past few months, aside from when they won the Women's Tag Team Championship. However, right now the focus on the Women's Championship is on other people, and she right now might see her more as someone they can look at to help anchor the tag team division, a renewed tag team division when they move forward. I said they need to use a tournament to make some tag teams out of it. There's not enough women for that to happen, unfortunately. But I wouldn't be surprised if the development is there if James comes back in a tag team with G. I'm not sure about her development again, or her assistant, but that seems to be the most natural outcome for her moving forward. But I do think that even as a singles competitor, she has a lot there. And I wrote, I wouldn't be surprised if she gets called to Raw or SmackDown before she actually finds the most success in NXT.
Doug is dreaming, and it's fun to watch.
Dog does that, too, and twitches and makes noises and everything when he's dreaming.
His legs are going like he's running, and he's like fake barking. Well, not fake barking, but
the
like barking. Like,
Yeah.
And he's got his eyes kind of sort of open, and they're moving around. It's kind of creepy but cute at the same time. Anyway, so let's go ahead and talk about Josh Briggs, Brooks Jensen versus Hank and Tank. And if the Hank and Tank chant doesn't take off, I'm going to be very upset. I'm gonna be very upset because it needs to. So this is a very quick match. It's 2:39. Briggs and Jensen picking up the win here. I really like what I saw out of Hank and Tank, at least so far in this match. I mean, I think it was quick for a reason. Maybe that they're not quite necessarily ready for prime time. I mean, Hank's certainly gotten better in the ring. Have we seen Tank in the ring yet?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought so.
Oh, who did he face a couple weeks ago? Oh, it's going to bug me, but I know he's in a singles match.
Okay. But regardless, I still like what kind of what they brought together in the ring. They've got a lot of charisma together, and I feel like they, like, almost shades of Heavy Machinery minus the comedic kind of the comedic Otis stuff. But that's kind of what the team reminds me of, in definitely in a good way. They're definitely curious to see, you know, how they progress as a team and what they, you know, what they're going to, you know, what's going to wind up accomplishing together. I can't see them winning NXT titles. I'm not sure, like, what the ceiling is for them at the moment. I don't think it's necessarily super high, at least for Tank. I'm not sure yet. You know, we'll see what happens. Like I said, it was a pretty good match. A bunch of hosses, big men slapping sweaty man meat. Let me throw it over to you.
Yeah. So I think when they first showed Hank and Tank together, I think it was you who called their name being Hank and Tank, and that's what happened. I think it was you. Might have been. I think it was you.
I'm gonna take the credit for it because I don't remember either.
Okay, so I mean, you saw that coming. One thing I pointed out last week that is maintaining is they're keeping these. Well, Femi wasn't there tonight, but he was brought up earlier, or he was brought up later in Nathan Frazier's little video. They're keeping Danny Palmer in the same sort of vicinity as Tank Ledger, and now Hank Walker, kind of keeping these three that they hyped up together in the same sphere with each other. And I noted that last week. I thought it was pretty smart to do. Tom corrected me that Danny Palmer was signed at the WrestleMania tryout, not NIL, but Femi and Ledger are the first two NIL to make TV, I believe. So I think also what this does by keeping them together is it also shows the NIL signees that if they show the improvement, they can make it to TV faster than they might believe, and that when they do make it, they'll either be grouped with people they know and have chemistry with, or that they'll at least get some TV time to help develop them even more so. I think that what I saw from Brooks Jensen tonight was his best wrestling night in NXT that I can remember. Outside of him looking like an 80s action movie star with a white headband like he's in Karate Kid or something, his offense tonight was at a level of physicality I didn't know that he could bring in the ring. And it made everything just look that much better, especially when he has that flowing curly mullet going on right now. So, you know, good for them. The Tank Ledger tooth spot, I think, was definitely worked. I think he must have already had a tooth loose or something, because the camera was already zoomed in on him before he made any move to his mouth. Put over kind of his grit and his toughness by taking out the tooth and putting it back in his singlet and then moving on with the bout.
That's why I wrote down they look so badass. I forgot about that spot.
The tooth spot, right. So,
yeah.
And I would be a bit hesitant to comment on the ceiling of these two, because and when we saw Hank Walker, we're like, what is this guy even doing on TV? And then he had solid matches with Dempsey and with Gulak and I believe with Wes Lee. Like, and all of a sudden, my opinion about where he could go really shifted, especially because, I mean, it coincided. How should I put this? Because I don't want to make it sound like it's all about the body. But his explosiveness and kind of the shift towards more physicality definitely coincided with him slimming down a little bit around the waist. And it worked for him. I'm not saying that anyone who's bigger around the waist is bad. Just saying observationally, it seemed to work much better for him in terms of how he came off in the ring and how he delivered his offense. Also, going to the singlet and not wearing jeans and a button-up, how much that adds to what you do. So I think that there is a good amount of potential there. I could see, maybe not together, but I could definitely see Hank as a tag team champion sometime. Tank, I need to see a little more of what you were saying, but I think Hank has shown a lot of improvement in his brief time on NXT.
All right, so let's go ahead and talk about... Oh, I scrolled around and I screwed myself up. Let's go ahead and talk about Tyler Bate versus Charlie Dempsey. Since you were just talking about Charlie Dempsey, it's the next match at least the next match in your report anyway. Charlie Dempsey with the win in 3:26 with a Dragon Suplex pin that I think may have exploded the brain of Bruce when it happened.
I needed a moment to myself after that. It's just been so long since I've seen Ultimo Dragon just bust that off in every match. And
it was a thing of beauty. It was a thing of beauty. It really was. It really was. This is a very short match, but I enjoyed what it was for what it was. As you'd expect with Tyler Bate and Charlie Dempsey, you know, a lot of back and forth, trading uppercuts, going back and forth at different stretches and things like that, in different holds. Very fast paced. We wound up getting a little bit of shenanigans here when Joe Gacy wound up making his way to the ring. He was curiously absent earlier in the night, and we haven't talked about it yet, but he's curiously absent earlier in the night when we saw Dyad go up against Gallus. So I was kind of wondering when he might show up. I expected him to actually show up during that match. And I was surprised when he didn't, but you know, we saw him in a backstage promo even before that. So, you know, seeing him show up here wasn't super, it didn't really surprise me. I'm kind of wondering if he might wind up being in contention at some point for the North American title, where he's kind of interjecting himself into this feud here. Because we had Wes Lee in the corner of Tyler Bate since Drew Gulak was in the corner of Charlie Dempsey. But there's a possibility, and I hate it when they do it, but I'm wondering if there's a possibility of like a five man or something for the NXT title at Battleground. If we're going to have five people kind of swirling around the title. But we'll see what happens. I'd rather see a one-on-one match, especially where I'm going to be seeing it in person, for my favorite title on the brand. But is what it is. Bruce, over to you.
Yeah, so I'll hit Gacy real quick. You might have missed it earlier in the night, but when he was giving his pep talk to the Dyad and they went off, he turned to Ava and said, "I took your advice, and I won't be accompanying the Dyad out to the ring, but I want you to guide them as I would guide them." So if you think back
That's so weird, because when the Dyad and Ava made their entrance, Vic Joseph said something along the lines of, like, "Where's Gacy?"
Okay, I missed that, but
that's what I picked up on. I think I might have missed that. But that segment
was quick, yeah. And it happened after a different segment leading into commercial, so it could have been easily missed. If, like, oh, they're going to commercial, I'll use the bathroom real quick or something.
Yeah.
But if you remember, I think it was last week, after he gave them another pep talk, he talked about getting them a title shot by beating Gallus or Joe Coffey or whoever it was last week. Ava turned to him and said, "You need to do something for yourself." So doing something for himself, it looks like, is challenging Wesley for the North American Championship, which Drew Gulak took offense to, because he wants to challenge for the North American Championship, which Charlie Dempsey wants to challenge for the North American Championship. So we could be seeing a fatal four-way for the title at Battleground, which includes Joe Gacy. Because, again, he told Ava, I took your advice into consideration. I'm basically going to do what you said for myself. And going for a singles title when he's been so focused on getting the tag titles back for the Dyad is her way of telling him to reward himself, basically. So that's what happened there. We already kind of talked about the match, we talked about the match because of my report, actually. The match was fine. I think what ruined the match at the end for me is when they showed the split screen of Ivy Nile watching and the Creed brothers trying to prank her with the blue mask. Like, you showed that the last time, and she went out and attacked Ava. So I knew she was going to attack Ava. And again, with knowing that Dyad was not going to win the match, I just kind of felt disengaged from the match in general because of that, and knowing Ivy Nile was going to come out and attack Ava, which she did, which led to the eventual demise of the Dyad. I do think after the match, I think I saw James Drake tell Ava to remember to scream, which she did right after. So if that was the case, then not the greatest of looks, but yeah.
All right, all right. So let me get back over here. But no, I kind of agree with you there. Right. Sorry, I walked out into the other room for a second because I thought I had 30 more seconds than you gave me. But that's okay. So let me go back and we'll talk about Ilya Dragunov versus Dominic Dijak. Well, Dijak. Why did I want to call him Dominic Dijakovic? Dijak. So this,
he loves black and gold, everybody.
I do. I really do. I miss black and gold, brand. Keith Lee versus Dijak. It was some things of beauty there. Go back and watch those matches if you haven't. Anyway, this probably could have been my contender for match of the night. If it wasn't for the finish, and even with the finish, I'm kind of okay with it, but I would have much rather seen a clean finish. This match started off unbelievable. Ilya Dragunov came out just swinging, and really started taking it to Dijak in a way that I wasn't necessarily expecting. I expected to see Dragunov get some offense here, but not to this point. Dragunov, I mean, he got in, I think it was, two German suplexes, and then I think it was a third one that was reversed and kind of changed the tide of the match, if I'm not mistaken. But man, the beginning of the match, Bruce pointed this out in our Twitter chat. He's like, Kelly is going to love the opening to this match, and he's going to. It was very fast paced, and really highlighted, like what Ilya Dragunov can do. Even though he's a small dude, I think there are some big things in his future if he stays on the same trajectory. The finish of the match, Dominic Dijakovic wound up getting himself disqualified and probably fined because he attacked an official. He attacked a referee with – I think he hit – now, I turned to start typing. Did he hit the ref with the chair?
No, he didn't know such thing. The ref grabbed the chair and – Dijak just used the momentum and swung the chair and the ref flew out and landed on the mat. So he never actually attacked the ref. He never actually hit him with the chair or placed his hand on him. So he could always play like, look, I was just trying to get the chair away from the ref and the ref held on. So he flew. I'm just that strong. So,
all right. Fair enough. Because I looked away to type at the report and he was down. I just assumed he hit him with the chair. Okay. But then
he got
he's still
quick if he got hit by a chair.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. And then, then you said chair to attack Dragunov. And then he used the steel steps to pin Dragunov down, which I was not a big fan of at all, because, you know, obviously the steel steps, they're typically in the corner of the ring, so they've got that little, like, you know, notch that I know you guys know what I'm talking about. And basically he took like the stairs, and they've done this before. I think they did it with like Mark Henry at one point or maybe Brock Lesnar, and used the stairs to like pin Dragunov down. Dragunov had to like lie sideways in there to make it look like he was being squashed. And even then Dijak gets on top of the stairs, which are, you know, kind of like upside down, well, standing straight up. He gets on top of the stairs to make it look like he's putting more pressure on the Dragunov, which he's not. He's very, very clearly not, just like that
it
wall
last week.
It
looked like the stairs went down on him more. When he came off of it, it looked like the stairs actually had some give.
Well, they had some give because they're not solid steel.
What I'm saying is like it looked like it came back up. Like what he actually stood on, it did drive into Dragunov's head, and because his arm was on his head, it looked like his head was turning red because of that. But I get your point about the steps not being the greatest tool for that.
It was like when they tried to bury Brock Lesnar with, like, you know, the announce table and a couple office chairs, and, you know, and then made it look like he couldn't get out. And it's like, dude, I could get out of that, and I'm like 1/10. Not even 1/10, probably like 70th as strong as Brock Lesnar. So it was just, I don't know, it just looked hokey to me. And it just, like, that cardboard wall from last week. I'm still going to bring that cardboard wall up, and the one they used before that too. I hated it. It's so stupid. But anyway, that was really my big, like my biggest pet peeve with, or not even pet peeve, my biggest gripe rather with the finish to this match was the steps. The rest of it was great. Even the DQ finish, I feel like kind of played on like some desperation on the Dijak character there, you know, wanting to make sure he secured a victory and actually like, or not even secured a victory, but made sure he did, because he obviously disqualified himself, but made sure that he did damage to and hurt Dragunov. So I wasn't like super like down on the DQ finish, but the stairs thing, just I was like, come on, this looks so dumb. Bruce.
I'm going to disagree with you a bit on the stairs part, because I think it accomplished what it was supposed to accomplish. And again, when he was standing on it, it did look like more pressure was being added onto there. And I don't know how much those stairs weigh, but they seem like they weigh a good bit, especially more on the announce table. So, and then after he jumped off, Dragunov had to basically bench press it off, and it looked like he had to strain to get the steps off of him. So I'm gonna disagree with you a bit there. The match itself...
Have you ever heard of selling?
No, I have heard of selling, but I also... have seen people try to lift those stairs, not trying to sell, and have difficulties lifting them steps. And it wasn't just one set. He had both the stairs connected still. It wasn't just the bottom set. It wasn't just the top set. It was both sets of stairs. So I'm going to say that there was more weight than you're giving credit for that to happen. And again, with how Dragunov was laying with his arm kind of over his head when when Dijak was standing on top of it, it looked like it was giving pressure on that arm onto his head. So if it was just one set of the stairs, I'd say, yeah, I would more agree with you, but it was both sets. And even when people who have a lot of strength mess with those stairs, they seem to have difficulties lifting them, not just because of the size, but because of the weight. So the match though, the reason why I tell you like the opening sequence is because literally it was just chops and only chops. And because of that, I wrote down that it was basically a New Japan style match, or the opening part of a New Japan style match, just going at it, stiff, stiff, stiff. And that was the theme of the night. Vic Joseph brought it up on commentaries. Most of these matches were just, it was probably one of the more hard hitting nights you've seen in NXT in a couple of years in terms of the matches and just how stiff they're going at each other. So that aside, the ending, I did not like the DQ either. Feud also never seemed like one that was going to end with a regular singles match. If you think about how Dragunov was attacked during spring break and after that trunk match with that door being crushed up on him by Dijak and everything, it always seemed like it was going to lead to some kind of Extreme Rules match, False Count Anywhere match, some kind of gimmick match between these two as a feud ender, because something like this was bound to happen if they got into a singles match, right? The breakdown of Dijak grabbing a chair or something. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get some kind of like a Street Fighter announcement or using Dijak seem like some kind of a asylum or match or something. I don't know, but in a microcosm, the ending sucked, but building the story towards their eventual gimmick match, it worked in what they were supposed to do there, including the post-match attack with the chair and the steps. So I wouldn't be surprised if next week, you know, Dragunov makes a challenge for some kind of, they're going to make it somehow tie into Battleground as a theme. So they'll have some kind of street fight, gimmick fight, for that at Battleground, I'm assuming. And if they don't, this is definitely something that they could have as a TV main event.
40 to 50 pounds, the aluminum steps weigh.
Okay.
So, just saying.
Total or a piece?
Total.
Okay.
I don't know, but even so, like, I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't
it's also
say.
The size layout could be
yeah.
Difficult, but...
But yeah, all right. So
then you add Dijak 270 pounds or whatever.
All right, let's go to Eddie Thorpe versus Damon Kemp. Now we found out tonight that Damon Kemp really likes Donkey Kong. He had this huge Donkey Kong logo on his singlet. I've been waiting.
Oh, it was DK. I thought it was Superman for some reason. I didn't get a good look.
No, yeah, it was DK, and it was red and yellow, just like the Nintendo Donkey Kong logo. So the entire match, I'm just like laughing to myself that he's like the biggest Donkey Kong fan. I don't know. My head's a weird place. But anyway, Damon Camp, Eddie Thorpe. This was a pretty hard hitting match. I think this was a match that probably elevated both men. Eddie Thorpe did come out on top, which I think was the right move considering Eddie Thorpe, just debuted. He's still, he's getting a pretty strong push so far. Damon Kemp, I feel like he needs some strong wins here. Because I feel like he's with the way they're pushing him and his win loss record, in order for us to start believing he's a credible like threat, I think he's got to start winning every once in a while. Now, I don't necessarily think it needed to be against Eddie Thorpe, like I said, considering he's the up and comer right now. And this match was kind of supposed to be like, who's better type of a deal. But I do want to see Damon Kemp start maybe going a little bit of like a dominant run. I don't know, maybe like 2 or 3 weeks, just some squash matches before you throw him into another feud or something like that. I don't know. He does have a like devastating Death Valley driver. So devastating. It actually, when Damon Kemp went to deliver it, he almost threw himself out of the ring. I've never seen anybody do that. It was kind of funny, but like he recovered really quick. And it might be on Botchamania, but as far as botches go, that like I said, he recovered quick, and it actually, and the way they played it off on commentary, it kind of made it look like it was like this really powerful, devastating Death Valley driver.
That's because he hit the rolling one that a certain NXT wrestler who we shall not name used to use before he would land his top rope elbow finisher.
Yes. Yes. I don't know.
The rolling death VD.
Oh, okay. Yep. All right.
It's the rolling Death Valley driver, which is why it looked like he was almost throwing himself out of the ring because he hit it towards the corner. So when I say rolling, like he flipped onto him and then came like flipped over.
Right.
Yeah. So the extra momentum.
Yeah. No. The extra momentum is definitely what carried him. It was just it was kind of just funny to see. But like I said, it wasn't necessarily just comical, but like I said, the way he recovered from it and the way the commentary kind of covered for it. I think it actually added to the match a little bit. Wrestling in a way shouldn't look pretty all the time. Like, should look a little gritty and stuff every once in a while. But we did see Eddie Thorpe go over here with a leaping elbow drop in 4 minutes and 57 seconds. Bruce, let me throw it over to you, for the match.
Yeah, this match was set up by their interaction last week where Damon Kemp told Eddie Thorpe to take out his trash because he's the rookie or he's a young boy, which, I mean, if you are a New Japan fan, then you know all about that. And so what you said about Damon Kemp needing wins is exactly what I said last week or after one of these weeks about Grayson Waller and him losing all of his big matches and big feuds. Like, yes, he can talk through it, but he still needs to win one every now and then for us to take him seriously in a title match, right? So this match was, again, another hard-hitting match. Kemp has done very well in his matches since he turned heel because he's been adding a lot more of that, the amateur wrestling and the sort of nastiness that kind of comes with that and the grappling, which I've always advocated for amateur wrestlers to do when they make the transition is channel that amateur background, especially if you're a heel and just stretch people basically, like old Kurt Angle or Perk Angle we used to do, or ECW Angle you would do, right? So, excuse me. A big fan of Eddie Thorpe, right? We've made that clear. I was a bit shocked that the finisher was kind of this leaping elbow, which is a bit more New Japan style because, you can have a lariat or a dropkick be a finisher or whatnot. So, however, both men looked good here. One thing that I think was very comical, and I want to make sure I bring this up, is Kemp grabbed the ring apron to break a crab from Thorpe. And then he held onto the apron, make some distance, and then when he created distance, he went back and tried to fix the apron and turned and got hit, and then the finisher happened. And after the match, if you look at him talking to the ref, he tells the ref, I was trying to fix the apron, and I just laughed so hard. Like, you're more concerned about the apron during a match than you are during the act. Like, I don't want to slip on the apron. Okay, well, you're the one who brought it into the ring in the first place. So I just thought that spot was really funny. And I think he showed a little bit of range towards the Damon Kent character, but I think if he does a little too much of that, they can kind of make him go towards the comedic ride a little bit, which isn't the most ideal route for Damon Kent, of course. But just something to point out, and if you didn't catch it, go back and look. It just it was right before they cut to the next segment, but it made me laugh a little bit. So it was right before Mackenzie Mitchell was interviewing Kiana James. So, yeah, just well done in terms of that little aspect right there.
Duke Hudson with Thea Hale versus Big Body Javi. Went 3 minutes and 58 seconds. Duke Hudson wins with a razor's edge. I don't know, in the hits and misses, I think I called it a classic Chase U match where, the person from Chase U winds up getting beat down for the majority of the match. They make their comeback. It's usually Andre Chase that makes his comeback, and then he loses. Duke Hudson didn't lose, but everything else pretty much went the same. Big Body Javi, he got, like I said, he got quite a bit of offense here, at least, you know, more than I expected him to against Hudson. But, you know, once they kind of played the match out the way they did and it clicked in my head, I'm like, okay, this is how Andre Chase's matches always go. And Andre Chase is gone right now. Duke Hudson is stepping in to fill in for Andre Chase until he returns. So kind of made sense. I don't really have a whole heck. Thea Hale. Thea Hale was probably the highlight of this match for me. She didn't. It's a megaphone, right? That she had, like, it's not like
cheerleading one.
Like cheerleader one, yeah. Not like a powered one, you know, like with batteries or whatever, but she had one of those. I didn't really know what
enhancer.
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, she's at ringside and being just as energetic as only Thea Hale can, you know, I mean, in the hits and misses, I said cheering, no, screaming Duke Hudson on, and that's exactly what she was doing. She's probably one of my favorite part of Chase University. Some people I know, you know, can't stand her and they think she's annoying or whatever, but man, I want to see her like grow that character and then turn heel and basically pull a Bailey. It would be great. Especially if she can pull it off. She's still young and I don't know if she necessarily has the range to do that yet. I'm not 100% sure about her in-ring ability either, because they're not giving her a whole lot of time to shine. But when she is in the ring, she's, you know, what I've seen so far is halfway decent. But man, that charisma and that energy is infectious. And I think it does a lot to help bolster Chase University as a whole. And help get me invested in this match. I really wasn't, not that I don't like Duke Hudson or Big Body Javi, but you know, I knew this was kind of just like go to sleep match or go to the bathroom match, whatever like that. But it wasn't really anything of major importance on the show. So Thea Hale was certainly a nice welcome part of the match for me. Bruce.
Since you brought up Thea Hale, I'll bring up something I forgot to mention with the woman earlier. Tiffany Stratton's finisher has been the "you can't escape" into the BME. Well, Vic Joseph tonight said that Tiffany Stratton calls it the prettiest moonsault ever and not the best moonsault ever, so it's the PME. So,
okay, I thought they changed that, because prettiest moonsault ever, like, it sort of sounded right, but not really.
No, yeah, it was best moonsault ever because of Christopher Daniels and the "you can't escape" is Kenny Omega's thing, and he also does the springboard moonsault, but... turning into prettiest moonsault ever definitely fits her character so well. So Thea Hale, I also believe during the match, when Javi was close to the corner and was in control, she yelled at him through the megaphone, "I hate you," or something like that. So that was pretty funny. Stage segment, I don't think we brought this up. When Hudson came by to kind of, quote-unquote, save Hale from Bernal's berating, he brought up that he likes the sound of Duke, Chase U, and Bernal caught that slip. So, and he said, I know what you're scheming. And, you know, he basically called out Hudson for what I've been saying was probably the master plan all along, either taking over Chase U or taking Hale away from Chase. And right now it seems like it's more about taking Chase U away from Andre Chase and becoming sort of the de facto head, because Thea Hale asked him how she did on the exam, and I couldn't tell if he said A or an 88. So one of the two. But it seems like he's taken
over. It was an 88.
88, okay. So it seems like he's also taken over the quote-unquote teaching duties of Chase U. So while the whole Duke University thing is hilarious because the actual Duke University, it does seem like it's funny when you have a heel pointing out in a would-be heel their kind of their end game, and having that would-be heel having to work around to not make it their master plan be exposed. Thus, aren't being exposed so early. So, I think more than the match, it was the backstage segment that needed to be paid more attention to, because of all the things that were happening in terms of the narrative being built, and especially Hudson's mannerisms throughout that segment.
No, exactly. I figured I'm kind of skipping over segments. I figured we'd kind of go back at the end, but yeah. All right, so. Then this is the last match because it's not the last match because the first match was Tiffany Stratton versus DG Dillon, but we already touched on that. So the last match we're going to talk about is Gallus versus the Dyad. I know we talked a little bit about this already, but last week we saw Joe Gacy and Joe Coffey in a match, and if Joe Gacy was able to win, it would lead to this match tonight where the Dyad would take on Gallus for the NXT titles. And we wound up seeing Gallus retain in 11 minutes and 2 seconds. And, you know, like I said, we talked a little bit about this earlier tonight. Ava, she got in the ring, did a little bit of distracting. Ivy Nile came out, attacked Ava. So I don't know if we need to talk a whole heck of a lot about this now that I think about it. Is there anything that you want to bring up?
The only thing I'll add is that I believe at Battleground we're going to have the Dyad and Ava versus the Creed Brothers and Ivy Nile in a 6-person intergender match. I thought before it was going to be Gacy and Ava versus Nile and Julius, but with how everything's been going between the tag teams, it seems like it's going to be the Creeds teaming up with Nile to take on Ava and the tag team of the Dyad instead of having Gacy involved there, especially with Gacy turning his attention toward the North American Championship.
All right, cool. So we got that. So let's talk about some backstage segments here. Now, usually when I host, I write them all down in a notepad, and so I can hit them quick when I get to this part of the show. I forgot to do that tonight because even though I knew Kelly wasn't going to be here, for some reason in my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, Kelly's going to be here tonight. So anyway, like we were just talking about, Joe Gacy spoke to Dyad, said he sacrificed himself to get them the opportunity, and he has no doubts he'll return the gold to Schism. Gacy turned to Ava as they left and said he would he'd take her advice but would not be accompanying them to the ring, and he asked her to guide them like he would. I know we talked a little bit about that earlier. We also saw the barbershop segment with Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. We saw the backstage interview with Bron Breakker that we touched on a little bit earlier. Let's see. We also had the backstage segment with Chase U and Big Body Javi, as we were just talking about. We saw a video it almost looked like the SmackDown hacker back in the day, but like a female version of that. Because we basically saw the hacker from behind, if you will. That's what I'm going to call her, the hacker. Saw her from behind, and like kind of like they weren't really like screens in front of her. It was almost like they were supposed to be projected or something like that in front of her. It's kind of hard to explain, but anyway.
They had a screen and used a projector with iridescent lighting to show the attacks on Nikita Lyons, Sol Ruka, and
Wendy Chu.
Wendy Chu, that was who it was.
Yeah. So we had that that segment. Anything on any of the segments I brought up so far?
Well, so far, the main thing I want to touch on here is I just really hope it's Tatum Paxley, because then I'm just going to keep gloating and gloating even more, because I called that months ago. And if that's true, you can add that to me being right about Endeavor being sold, or Endeavor buying UFC, to Cody losing at WrestleMania, to Jey Uso being the one to dethrone Roman Reigns. Like, that's still pending, but yada, yada. And just forget about all the call-up predictions I've ever made on NXT. So, yeah.
Bruce, you're always right, man.
I mean, what can I say? What can I say?
You know?
All right. I'm not mean at all.
You probably think this podcast's about you. Okay, that was a horrible joke. I'm sorry. If we still have any listeners after that. So we're not on right now. Well, that's true, actually. You know, a good point. All right, now we've still got a few people listening, but nobody has hit one. So I haven't actually been looking at the switchboard. So, Keith, if you did come on, and I might have not – don't think I ignored you, because I just didn't have that tab open. I'm only using one monitor tonight, guys. I'm not using my typical three-monitor setup. I'm just kind of lounging on my laptop. Okay. So we also had Mr. Stone and Von Wagner walking in the back. We saw Mr. Stone bring up the picture of the baby with like scars on his head. That's supposedly a baby picture of Von Wagner. I have no idea if it's actually a picture of Von Wagner as a baby or not. Like, I don't know if he actually went through any, like, surgery as a kid. I tried to look that up a little bit and I couldn't find anything on it. So I don't know if like it's legit and they're bringing it up, because I feel like the baby's skull is also kind of shaped like, I don't know. But we did see that. And there was somebody that wound up making fun of him in that segment, called him a freak. And yeah, Wagner said pistachio to Stone's comment about favorite ice cream. It was weird. Then we also saw Gallus hit the kitchen area. Creed Brothers and Niall were walking through as well. That kind of set up the angle for later on in the night when Niall came out in the middle of the match. Then let's see, what else do we have? We had Mackenzie Mitchell talking with Kiana James out in the back. We had the Breaker interview segment with Mackenzie Mitchell. And that brings us to the end of hour two. Anything to bring up there?
I really just want to talk about the Nathan Fraser segment more than anything in regards to the non-wrestling segment. Oh, I don't know if you brought up Tyler Bate and Wesley in the back, but Wesley made a joke.
That's like the next thing I was about to bring up, so feel free.
You said end of hour two. That's why I was wondering.
It was the beginning of hour two, yeah.
Okay, beginning, yeah. So for the end of hour one, then, no, I think we're good there.
Cool. Feel free to just talk about those two segments with for now, because, like,
right,
you know, there's quite a few of them, so we can hit up.
The only thing I wanted to say on Bate and Wesley in the back was Wesley came in and Bate was meditating with a bunch of smoke, guessing from incense and whatnot. And then Wesley said, I haven't seen this much smoke since I was hanging out with Riddle. I was like, okay. So Duke Hudson said to Bernal, you don't even go here. And I thought that was a little throwback to Bianca Belair. But
I like that.
So, yeah. Then we get to Nathan Fraser's segment. We talked about Mitchell with talking to Dragon Lee. The hard-hitting home truths with Nathan Fraser. So I actually like this segment a lot.
I love it.
I think it showed a lot of different sort of – it showed a lot of range for Fraser, because he showed the goofy side. He showed the more serious side, but he also showed the I can be serious almost to the point of being detrimental when he was talking about wanting to take apart Noam Dar. So we have three people sort of intertwined with this Heritage Cup situation, and that's Noam Dar, the champion himself, his call out of Dragon Lee, and then Nathan Fraser, who made fun of Noam Dar for getting super kicked last week when he was trying to interfere. But then I know also brought up the history where his first ever WWE TV appearance was on an episode of Supernova Sessions, which is coming back next week with Dragon Lee as the first guest. So there was a lot of good sort of tying together here of history and storylines. Fraser showed... One reason I really like this segment is the show was so fast-paced from segment to segment. Even some of the interview segments in the back were so quick, you didn't have much time to breathe. And this came in right at a spot where I was starting to get like, whoa, I needed to slow down. I'm trying to get this report typed up. And
yeah.
I didn't put too many of my takes between matches tonight because there was just so... that it was just so hectic of a pace. It felt like an early AEW show almost, right? So I think this segment was made even better by its placement because it just gave me a bit of time to breathe and relax and still enjoy what he was putting out there in terms of this segment. I don't know if this was his idea from Shawn Michaels, Road Dogg, whoever, maybe Molly Holly, whoever's over there. But whoever made this idea, good on them. And the execution by Fraser, also good on him. Because for someone who was a bit lost and only known as the guy who's really fast and has great matches, now we have a bit more of an idea of who Fraser is as a character as opposed to just that guy in the ring. So I think in all regards, this segment was one of the best of the night. And in terms of what it means for Fraser moving forward, I believe it means he's going to be a bit more successful in the win-loss column and also get more appearances on TV because segments like this, I think, are what ties together the characters you see in the ring and how much you believe of them when they're out there.
I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show. There's a couple other segments that we didn't touch on, but there's really nothing major talking points that I see anyway. So that's going to bring us to the end of our show. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses. Like I said earlier, I've got that up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out. And if you guys also have any interest in role-playing games and ways you can use them as self-care or form of therapy, whether it be clinical or just, you know, on your own and kind of self-care type things, check out my YouTube channel, DEGETIME, Deej Time, where me and my group of degenerates take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. Bruce, who are you?
Bruce Lee Hazelwood. Find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And you can find my report for what was a very, very hectic show that got a lot done and it's a lot of time up at the Torch and on the VIP side.
All right, guys, we appreciate you being with us here tonight. Sorry about forgetting to get the links up.
That's my fault.
Well, you know, it is, but I was going to take the blame with you. So, you know, now you just, you know.
Well, I mean, Nate, I guess you could check my report and make sure the links work in every week, but I also could make sure the links
are
working
every week. Yeah, you know, but next week, we know not to do that. So it'll be there. And hopefully we'll get to chat with you guys. We'll see you then.